This week, the misconception about Freemasonry, the founding of America, and even the education system gets put under the microscope. Brother Darren A. Lehners explores this idea and some of the ramifications as time goes on. Where did the creation of rituals even come from? How closely tied is Freemasonry to education? And is that education just for the public, or is it also for us? Finally, we'll wrap it all up with a contemplative exercise, thinking about the idea of compassion. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 570. I want to go ahead and thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, we cannot make this show, which has been going since July of 2011. If you want to learn more about how you can help bring Masonic education to the world, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your options. Additionally, we have a cool shop that you can get some limited edition items, including some handmade leather goods that I offer. If you've got anything that you'd like to propose to be made, I'm certainly open to starting a project. Aside from that, we've got a great bookstore where we have all of the books by the people who have been on the show, as well as my own personal recommended reading lists and books recommended by our guests. In the news, what's been going on? Well, I've been very busy aside from the multiple trips that we had in October and pretty much finishing up what we've got until later on this year, the end of the year rather, at the end of December. We've been dealing with some family stuff here in my house. My mom has had some health struggles recently, and so we've been helping out a lot with that. In fact, she's in the hospital, so we've been dealing with that for a couple of weeks now. And this is some of the reason why I have been either out of pocket or episodes have been late, this kind of thing. We've just been very busy dealing with that around our house. Very open, and I'm very transparent about the things that are going on for us. So I just wanted to let you all know in case you sent out an email or whatever else. That's what's going on right now. So appreciate you guys' patience as usual. And again, thank you for your continued support in the podcast. Not going to quit doing the podcast or anything like that. We're moving full force with that, and including making improvements and doing a series of great new segments that are going to be coming up. In fact, speaking of those, we've got some great new segments from Worshipful Brother Patrick Day on the Masonic Mythbusters segment that are all going to be very holiday themed, and I think you all will really enjoy them. Also in the news, I did want to go ahead and mention that we are just a few days away from the second annual Double Eagle Con 2022. This is hosted by the Scottish Rite Valley of Chicago, northern jurisdiction of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. However, here's what's a little different this year than last year. We are open to all Master Masons. Any Master Mason can go ahead and get a ticket. The event is scheduled again for November 19th. That's going to be on Saturday. It's an all-day event. We'll be starting off and kicking breakfast at probably between 7 and 8. That'll allow us time for, you know, snacking and being able to grab a coffee, schmooze a little bit, and get registered. Now, again, over the course of a single day, we're going to have 5 really prolific men in Freemasonry. Last year, we did 6 or 7, maybe even 8 speakers, and it was really well attended and loved. We got a lot of value out of the particular event. This isn't your typical Masonic Con event. This is more on the level of interactivity as well as deeper, all new talks. We've got 5 keynote speakers. I'd like to just run down this list for you all. This is going to be, a great event. We've got Andy Albright. He's KCCH. He's from Charleston, South Carolina. We've got Dr. Mark Driesenstock. He's also KCCH. He's a managing editor of the Scottish Rite Journal, the official bi-monthly periodical of the Southern Jurisdiction Scottish Rite. We're going to have Dr. Carbel Fahad, who will be 33rd degree. He's a past Grandmaster of DC. He's got a PhD in electrical and computer engineering and a master's in French literature. Brilliant dude. We've got Robert Marshall, again, a passionate Masonic historian and writer from Waco, Texas. You've seen him at various Masonic con events over the last few years. He has unique ability to tell really cool stories. And of course, our own Scott S. Duball, a two-time past master of DC Kregear Lodge in Wheeling, but also he was our charter master for Spes Novum Lodge, and also he's a member of Denver Lodge in Denver, Colorado. And he was our first state education officer ever here in the state of Illinois. And he was the chairman of our Committee on Masonic Education. And he was a past president of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. So these guys are super awesome guys, very approachable individuals, and people that you can have a conversation with. Now, the tickets for the event are only $50. You get a breakfast, so they're going to have an omelet station, bacon, sausage, fruit, pastries, all that good stuff, coffee, and there'll be a nice lunch as well. The registration breakfast will begin at 7 a.m., and we'll have the first speakers kick off at 8 a.m. Lunch will be at 1 p.m., and our event will be over by 2 in the afternoon. So this is a great opportunity to get out for some awesome Masonic education. You'll be home in time for dinner. We're going to recommend business attire, and if you've got any questions about this, you can contact reservations at scottishrightchicago.org, or you can head on over to tinyurl.com/DoubleEagleCon2022, right? And then that will take you right to where you can purchase your tickets for Double Eagle Con. Now, what are they going to talk about? What are their topics? Well, they're pretty rad topics, stuff you've never heard of. Dr. Mark Driesenstock is going to be talking about Goethe, the 514-volume collection at the House of the Temple. He says is dominated by the works of Germany's greatest poet and Freemason, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. We've also got Dr. Fahad, past Grand Master. He's going to be talking about the arts and sciences across the Masonic curriculum. He says Masonry is a school of discipline whereby we learn through rituals and practice the depth of the esoteric meaning and allegories in the speculative denomination. In the various degrees, the ritual always points to education. It encourages Masons to expand their horizons in the fields of liberal arts and sciences. It impresses upon the mind the essential requirements to meet our goals and build our inner temple. It provides us the necessary tools to polish our imperfections and draw us closer to the main magnanimous and divine plan of spreading brotherly love and happiness. The purpose of this presentation is to stir the mind of members and to encourage them to be effectively engaged in various activities and leadership positions through learning and practicing those virtues inculcated in the rituals. Brother Andy Albright's presentation I'm really excited about also. It's Masonic Lessons in the Poetry of Robert Frost. He says the American poet Robert Frost demonstrated the unique ability to personify nature, then use that personification as a metaphor meant to inspire the thoughts of mankind regarding life, death, mortality, and many other such topics. Brother Robert W. Marshall, his presentation is called Bloodletting, Birds, and Bazookas. And the description is very short. An examination of the historic usages of the self-sacrificial pelican as a symbol within and beyond the 18th degree. Now here's what I know. Beyond the 18th degree is where the bazookas come in. You're going to not want to miss this awesome history. And then we've got, of course, Brother Scott S. Duball. He's doing an approach to Masonic ritual and research. And in this presentation, Scott's going to endeavor to provide some guidance to a lot of our brothers who say things like, you know, I want to write a paper, but I don't know what I'd write about. And he's met this statement often enough, and he really hopes to provide brothers with a strategy for addressing this conundrum. Scott's going to cover the approach that he uses for reading and reflecting on ritual. And this approach provides him with inspiration for conducting research, and he hopes it'll do the same for you. Now, his talk is going to include examples of how he used this process in one of his latest research projects for the Valley of Chicago on the Pelican and the 18th degree. So, again, this is going to be a fantastic conference. Really hope you take advantage of it. If you're in the area, again, 383 East Lake Street, Bloomingdale, Illinois. You know, it's at the Valley of Chicago, but there's no Chicago traffic. So, A plus on that. They're offering refunds up to a day before, just in case. But please, go check this out. I'll have links to the ticket page in the show notes, but I think you're really going to have a good time. I'll be there. We can share a coffee in the morning and talk a lot about some of the concepts that these guys are going to be diving into. I'm really excited about the topics, and I hope to see you guys there. Again, Double Eagle Con 2022. It's going to be amazing, and it's just a few days away. So you got to get the tickets because ticket sales end on the 17th, I think. But let's go ahead and get into the education this week. Now, I'm going to read a piece that was written by Brother Darren Lehners just recently, a couple of weeks ago, and I really liked the piece, but I also want to call attention to something that he's going to be publishing tomorrow, or if you're listening to this on Monday, it was published today on the Midnight Freemasons, and I think we might have a new episode of The Fourth Veil to talk a little bit about some of those things. But what are those things? Well, you're going to have to check out his article that'll come out on Monday, November 14th. But for now, let's get into this piece called Education is the Foundation of Speculative Freemasonry. I was researching for Masonic content on YouTube the other night, and I ran across this podcast, Ben Franklin's World, Episode 329, Mark Tavert, Freemasonry in Early America. Ben Franklin's World, whose guest was, again, Mark Tavert. Now, Mark Tavert is the director of archives and exhibits at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. I can't recommend the episode enough. Several things that Mark addressed on the podcast stood out to me, and I wish to highlight them below. I will note that the below are based on notes I took during the podcast as well as additional research, so my interpretation of the information that was given is based upon this and is in no way supposed to speak for Brother Tavert, unless otherwise noted. Number 1. Freemasonry had no impact on the Revolutionary War, and the Masons such as Franklin, Washington, and Revere had all joined Freemasonry for different reasons. There were, at the time of Franklin, Washington, and Revere's raising, a small number of lodges that existed in the colonies. So the actual number of Freemasons during the war would have been quite small. As Mark points out in the above article, which is linked, it's ridiculous to think that it did, and for every Mason that was a revolutionary figure, there was a figure that was not. Franklin actually had written an article for his newspaper ridiculing Freemasonry prior to being initiated in 1731. Franklin had joined because at the time, 39 years prior to the Boston Massacre, colonial life was focused on the British Crown, and receiving patronage and honors or support from the Crown was the goal of many upperclassmen. Freemasonry was a way to achieve this, much like joining the Navy or Army or getting another government commission could be a way to achieve this goal. Of course, Franklin went on to get his commission, serving as Grand Master, Provincial Grand Master, and Deputy Grand Master during his 60-year Masonic career. Washington was initiated into his rural lodge in Fredericksburg in 1752 because he was planning on becoming a tobacco farmer, and the other farmers in his area were members of the lodge. Tavert didn't mention this, but the Fredericksburg lodge that Washington joined did not have a charter at the time of his initiating passing and raising. So he would have been considered an irregular or clandestine Mason by today's standards. His lodge would ask for and receive a charter from the Grand Lodge of Scotland 5 years after Washington was raised. Washington viewed joining as a rite of passage, as well as a way to connect to the other farmers. But later, during and after the Revolutionary War, viewed it as an incubator for republican virtues. As clarification, republican is used in the classical sense and refers to the virtues built around concepts such as liberty and inalienable individual rights, recognizing the sovereignty of the people as the source of all authority and law, rejecting monarchy, aristocracy, and hereditary political power, virtue and faithfulness in the performance of civic duties, and vilification of corruption, as well as a way to improve men by giving them a liberal education. He also viewed Freemasonry as a way to improve individual communities. Revere was initiated in 1760 at St. Andrew's Lodge in Boston. Revere viewed Freemasonry as a way to grow his trade and encourage commerce. Revere was a silversmith by trade and later became the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts from 1795 to 1797. He would have been representative of many of the middle class and upper middle classmen that would have joined Freemasonry during the mid to late 1700s. Interestingly enough, Revere joined a lodge that was chartered through the Grand Lodge of Scotland. Considering that you had at this time four Grand Lodges, Ireland, Scotland, the English Moderns, and Ancients, granting charters, the English Grand Lodges would have thought the others were irregular, and vice versa. The Moderns and Ancients considered each other irregular at this time. It could be argued that Revere also was a member of an irregular lodge, depending on your point of view. 2. The Revolutionary War did have an impact on Freemasonry. Historically, you can trace an increase in membership after armed conflicts as the survivors turn to fraternal organizations to replace the camaraderie that they experienced in those conflicts. However, Freemasonry was also in line with the Enlightenment ideals of the time, which were the same ideals that were inspiring the non-Freemason revolutionary figures like Jefferson. This being said, the Revolutionary War allowed for westward expansion, and you see the growth and expansion of Freemasonry as being one of the things occurring with this expansion. By 1790, there were 200 lodges, and by 1800, this number doubled to 400 lodges. As earth-shaking as the above points might be to some, there are some other things that Brother Tabard said that I really wanted to focus on. 1. The writing, rituals, and initiation ceremonies is a literary genre that started around 1720 with the first printed exhibitions of Masonic ritual. Much like opera, poems and other entertainment genres were written about myths and legends. Masonic ritual was a form of entertainment and was enjoyed as a literary exercise. 2. Masonic lodges were instrumental in teaching men to read, providing them a classical education, and teaching them about the liberal ideas of self-determination, the classical republican virtues as mentioned above, peaceful assembly of people, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion. First of all, the men who joined Freemasonry during this time would have been men who believed in self-determination, the classical republican virtues, peaceful assembly of people, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion. Many of those that would have joined during the transition of the Masonic guilds into what would become the Grand Lodge system we know today were educated quote-unquote gentlemen like Elias Ashmole, who we know joined a lodge in 1646. However, the purpose of the lodge would also have been to educate those that were uneducated, and as more of the middle class joined, the lodges would have served to teach men how to read, provide them with a liberal education, and instill many of the liberal ideas listed above into them. Of course, the guilds would have been established to be not only a ruling body for the stonemasons local to an area, but also a trade school to teach the apprentices the knowledge of stonemasonry in order to advance them to a point where they could be master masons. And our degree system is a direct descendant of this. One could also argue that one of the many reasons behind Prince Hall forming African Lodge No. 1 was to promote literacy amongst African American men. And given his efforts to promote and secure public education for African American children, I don't think this is an invalid argument. In fact, after his numerous attempts to secure public education failed, he started a program from his own home with a focus on the liberal arts and a classical education. I think it then stands to reason that both Prince Hall and English, Scottish, Irish Freemasonry had the same goal of educating their brethren as one of their main goals at their foundations. At this same time, you have Masonic rituals being printed in the press and elsewhere starting around 1720. And you slowly begin to see hundreds upon hundreds of initiation ceremonies being written as a literary exercise and as a form of enjoyment. So there is the birth of a literary genre associated with the writing and creation of new initiatory ceremonies and rituals, which gave birth to the Scottish Rite and York Rite rituals of today, as well as many others that were used as a folkway for both men and women alike. You could then argue that subgenres were created, and that what I'm currently writing in this blog is a subgenre of this literary genre itself. However, for many people, the Bible was the only book that they might own. So to be able to write and act out the stories from the Bible would have been a popular form of entertainment for them at the time. Historically, you can research many instances where Freemasonry and education were intertwined. Many Grand Lodges in the United States were instrumental in helping founding the public education within their state and or jurisdictions. In fact, one of the Enlightenment ideals that many of the Freemasons of that time would have supported would have been a free, public, universal education for children, as it was necessary for them to grow into conscious, productive citizens. I think you see this belief continue into the mid to late 20th century, when there was a sea change, and the majority Masonic thought became that public schools were political institutions. This belief was popularized by Henry Coyle in the 1960s in his Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. Is it then any wonder that we have seen a diminishing of education pursuits in our lodges? How tragic is it that our organization has gone from once being the only place a man might receive lessons on how to read or receive a classical education, to a place where education is eschewed in favor of discussions over the building repair, the types of toilet paper the lodge is buying, and other banal items? The 7 liberal arts and sciences, which are grammar, logic, rhetoric, which is the verbal arts of the trivium, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy, the mathematical arts of the quadrivium, and which we as fellowcraft are charged to study, used to be an important part of one's lodge experience. What once was the foundation of speculative Freemasonry has now been discarded, much like the keystone in the Mark Master degree, into the rubbish. While we no longer need to teach our members to read, or at least I hope this is the case, there are still lessons that can be discovered through the pursuit of the verbal arts of the trivium and the mathematical arts of the quadrivium. Discussions of a Masonic nature using the above as a focus will not only strengthen each of us, but also hopefully open up new horizons for ourselves and our brethren. Perhaps we should also attempt to rediscover the classical republican virtues listed above, and discuss concepts such as civil society and civic virtue, both which are lacking in today's society. Many will scoff at such a notion, or attempt to dismiss it as political in nature, all while we have already seen the influence of religion and politics creep into our lodges. Just a week ago, during our tiled Grand Lodge sessions, men stated their religious beliefs and used them in their arguments for being for or against an amendment that dared to state Masonry knows no distinction of race or color or sexual orientation. It is the mental, moral, and physical qualifications of the man that are to be considered. Yet, they were allowed to state them. In my humble opinion, these men should have been gaveled down. Instead, our Grand Lodge, without realizing it, set a precedent for men to violate the Declaration of Principles of their own Constitution, which states, "This Grand Lodge affirms its continued adherence to that ancient and approved rule of Freemasonry which forbids the discussion in Masonic meetings of creeds, politics, or other topics likely to excite personal animosities within their own lodges." How we got here is unimportant. What is important is that we must work to bring back this educational experience and hold ourselves accountable to our principles. We must fight back the influence of the profane world in our sacred spaces. We must return to basing the meeting experience around classical liberal education, to not only expand their knowledge of the verbal arts of the trivium and the mathematical arts of the quadrivium, as well as the concepts of civil society and civil virtue, so that they might think for themselves instead of parroting everything they read on social media or hear in the media. In doing so, perhaps they can go into their communities and improve them. Perhaps by working with their public schools to encourage reading, they might be able to have the generations behind them capable of individual thought. Perhaps in time, their children might be able to grow up in a world that is no longer polarized by those things which divide us now. Many Grand Lodge charities have programs to promote reading in public schools, and it should be every lodge's goal to participate in these. If we truly go back to our roots of actually improving the individual Mason via education, instead of saying that Freemasonry does this when in reality it does not, perhaps we can, at the very least, improve retention or separate the wheat from the chaff. The men that want to learn and improve themselves will stay, while those who would rather not can go. I'd rather have a smaller, better educated fraternity than have the one that currently exists. Quite frankly, the one that currently exists would rather rest on its laurels, continue to act as if we're living in the 1950s, and bury its head in the sand to the reality that the Grand Leveler is going to take over 75% of its population in the next 20 years. When the average age of our Master Masons is somewhere in the mid-60s, the writing is on the wall. My hope is that I will live to see the transformation of Freemasonry into what it once was, because it's coming. The brethren who are my age and younger will see to that. Darren A. Laners. Well, well, well. Stephen Toast. That's a little inside joke between Darren and I, but of course, if you are a fan of that show, then you got the joke. But anyway, I really liked this article, going from talking about some of the misconceptions about Freemasonry and the general public and perhaps the founding fathers and all of this kind of Americana nationalism stuff that we hear a lot about in lodges. But Darren has picked out a little bit of what mattered here, and this was kind of this idea of formal or at least a semi-formal education or a call to be educated. And he goes on to talk about how, of course, we have an issue really in Freemasonry with not providing this education, which may or may not actually affect the craft as it operates today. Perhaps back in the day, right, the reasons to join the Masonic Lodge might have been an uplifting of a sorts in a social kind of way. But what is that same benefit today? Does it have one? Do we have one? And finally, Darren goes on to talk about Freemasonry currently resting on its laurels and, in some instances, the lack of pursuing educational pursuits in Lodge has led to a semi-quasi-anti-intellectual approach to what we're all about, which necessarily invites those within our walls who might not have an interest in, maybe they're not philosophical things or, you know, these classical esoteric thoughts, but even the ideas of basic liberty, civic awareness, and civic duty, and valuing the public education, those are qualities that Freemasonry has really always held in high regard. And so to throw those away and allow us to be a club that allows the destruction of the secularist values that we are supposed to uphold, it leads necessarily to what has happened in, you know, this Grand Lodge situation that we were there for. And also, there is a direct link between the social structure and the progressive attitude of the societies in which those structures exist. For instance, you look at more highly populated areas, and those areas, generally speaking, are more progressive in their ideologies. And speak to this in, you know, political terms if you want to. I won't mention the obvious correlations here. And the more rural areas tend to be more traditional in values and their approach to things. So again, looking at those, what's quite interesting is that in a fraternity that is based on the idea of being a progressive moral science, tends to be quite anti-progressive in practice, and its argument against the progressive moral science that it is supposed to be is actually the preservation of traditional values, which then tie back to non-secular ideologies, meaning somebody would be able to say, we can't do this in Masonry because it goes against something that's explicitly forbade in my particular religion. And so if you codify this, I can't be a member anymore. This is what happened, literally. So we can't say that, oh, Robert, you're reaching here. I'm not. And this happened. And we see it time and time again. And so going back to the title of the article this week, that education is the foundation of speculative masonry, which is what we all practice. And so we need to invest in education, both in ourselves and in the communities in which we live. We need to allow that education and the discoveries that come with it to open wide or rent the veil of discoveries that will allow us to be more progressive in thought and action, which actually will enable us to be in complete reconciliation with what Freemasonry espouses to be. All right, this week I wanted to go ahead and give you a tarot card. It's been a while since we did that. So we did a tarot card segment in the past, and I'll just explain this very quickly, that the way I will use tarot in these segments is not Masonic. Give you that right up front. But I will say that I use the tarot much in the same way we all use the Masonic working tools. A tool that enables us to ask ourselves questions about our lives and how we are acting within them. And so the tarot is much like a Rorschach in that same way, that you draw a card, you read about its possible meanings, and then you say, does this apply to me? Where could it apply to me? And even if you reach a little bit, you start to think in outside the normal realms of typical thought that you would have. You start to approach these possible things in different avenues of your brain. And what this does is it increases your viewpoint. Instead of being completely subjective, you take a subjective approach to a card to give you a more objective view of your life. So this week I'm going to be drawing a card from the Hermetic Tarot, right? This is based upon the Golden Dawn. And so this is a tarot deck that's by Godfrey Dowson. It's the Hermetic Tarot based on Golden Dawn's astrological attributes using Sephirotic, Angelic, Geomantic, Numerical, and Kabbalistic elements. These are black and white cards. I do recommend the deck. I think it's really cool. The artwork is unlike most of the other things that you'll find and sticks mostly to the same traditional values that everybody else does. But anyway, so let's go ahead and draw a single card. Now for the listeners this weekend, I cut out all of the sounds of me actually shuffling the deck as I was going through this here. So this week we actually have the card that we drew is the High Priestess. We drew it upright, so we have maybe a little bit more of a traditional way to look at the card. The High Priestess, of course, she sits on a throne. And in the Hermetic Tarot, she's referred to as the Priestess of the Silver Star, which is, of course, the moon, the Silver Star. Now, I could verbally tell you about what this card looks like, but instead, let me just read the excerpt from the White Book. The Priestess of the Silver Star. The moon appears above the seated priestly figure of Isis, the Eternal Virgin. She is adorned in the purest feminine light of the moon, the same light that serves as a veil to hide the moon, the same light that serves as a veil to hide the Eternal Spirit. The High Priestess holds upon her knee a book, partially concealed by her mantle, which holds the truth behind the veil of the feminine light. At her breast she holds a lyre, the law of Artemis. For she is also a huntress, and, like Diana, she hunts by enchantment. This card rules the path of the camel that runs from Keter to Tiphereth on the Tree of Life. This same path runs between the two gigantic pillars beside the throne upon which the High Priestess is majestically seated. The High Priestess controls the energy of life between the two pillars that are topped by a spiraling pinnacle. At the bottom of the card are the large spheres of her throne. Some researchers view the seated figure in this card as the illustrious and controversial Pope Joan, who allegedly resigned during the middle of the 9th century. Now it says the meanings of this card, when upright, relate to change, alteration, fluctuation, wisdom, sound judgment, common sense. And so, well, I think I agree with all of those points, but I think it falls short a little bit on the general idea of the High Priestess card. And so for our Craftsman Plus out there, I'm going to post a picture of the card as I usually do in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group, which is, again, available to all those who are supporters of the podcast. So the actual card here, what you're seeing is four steps up, right, which could be a allusion to the elements. She's got the pillars that are designed here are pretty standard in iconography, but you can definitely see the idea of the Kabbalah being transported onto the card. But in a traditional sense, she does hold the Book of the Law, right, or the Book of Artemis, this kind of idea that she's got ultimate truth. But the ultimate truth is like this mystery. And it's a mystery because the card initially, I think, speaks to the idea of a patriarchal society. And why it's a mystery is because it's feminine. And, of course, the feminine is always somewhat of a mystery to man. Not because woman is a mystery, but because men refuse to embrace feminine values. And so when we see this card come up in our draw, really what this should speak to is that it's saying, hey, trust your intuition. Look to your subconscious. Use meditations and visualizations, and maybe even get involved in some spiritual communities to help you more connect with the idea of the divine feminine. Now, this is not just words for the males out there. There are females also who have trouble connecting to this idea of feminine virtue and traditional virtues. Now, we're not talking about the things like stereotypes and things. What we're talking about are these Kabbalistic values of divine feminine virtues, things like empathy, right? And so when this card comes up, it's asking us, are we being empathetic? Are we being caring? Are we trusting our internal intuition, which might be that book of truth? When this card comes up, it's a key. It says, hey, we need to allow ourselves to be constructive in balancing out how we act. The first step is acknowledging a misbalance, which allows us to develop the skill, which, of course, is this idea of intuition, but it's also a signal that you need to connect with, again, those virtues of compassion and empathy. This allows for the equilibrium, the idea of the rebus. One website says, you know, feel rather than think. That always stuck with me. And of course, we always need to think. To not do that is foolish. Zero. So the next time you get into a situation, perhaps, where you've got somebody in lodge who is going through something, yes, we have words like, I'll be there for you, bro, but maybe take the next step into the next area, which might be a little uncomfortable, means that you might actually put some skin in the game. You might have to actually really help somebody. And doing these exercises is like a real exercise, like you're exercising your bicep muscles, right, to get bigger, to be stronger. And just like that, when we exercise these attributes, they become stronger, more prominent. And the goal is the equilibrium. And so that's what this High Priestess card asks us to do. And I'm always trying to be more empathetic and using compassion and things, but sometimes I get rather robotic. And this card told me, at least in my own subjective way, that I need to think more about other people. And of course, that's going to be on the forefront of my mind as we move through the week. But that's it for this week. I want to thank everybody out there for joining us. Once more, I want to thank Darren A. Laners for all of his hard work and his writing. We have gone to full-blown Darren Laners, managing editor. He's no longer the co-managing editor. I am out of the game. I am what we'll call the emeritus managing editor. You know, I'll help him out when he needs it, but he is the managing editor over there, and he is just doing a bang-up job. He's the man. I want to congratulate him also because he's got some big changes happening in his life. New house coming. Congratulations on his engagement. So if you don't know, you know, he got engaged and it's a big deal and we're really excited. Lisa's amazing. So just thanks to Darren and all his work out there. I want to thank everybody out there who help support the show, our fellows, contributors, producers, and legacy partners. Again, if you want to know how to help the show out and bring more Masonic education to everybody out there, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can assist. And then, you know, click around, explore. There's all kinds of goodies and hidden things on our website that a lot of people forget about, you know, like free Manly P. Hall lectures that have been remastered. What? Yeah, we did that a long time ago. And those are all out there. We've got tons of really cool stuff, tons of peripheral sites that we run and that we keep a little bit disconnected from the podcast, but feel free to check them out. And so until next week, stay on the level. For Wentz KMU, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Wentz KMU, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Here's your